We'll give a few more minutes. It seems we have about 14 people here and might be a few more coming in. So let's give about two, three more minutes and then we'll start the meeting. Hello, Ms. Cement. Good to see you. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to hear be here.
For those that are just coming on board, we're just waiting for a few more people to trickle in. So we'll start in just a minute or two. I see that we have representatives here from the Department of Justice, from the mayor's office, city attorneys, community members, Oregon Justice Resource Center. Glad to see you just coming on, but glad to see the Oregon Justice Resource Center here as well. Look forward to conversations with you, hopefully. We have Dana Walton, the Deputy Director of IPR. Good to see you again, Dana. And then we have CRC members here. We have Portland Cop Watch. Looks like on video. And we have a few reporters here as well. Good to see you here, Alex Zelensky, as well as I believe Maxine Bernstein is on here as well. Good to see you as well. Good to see you virtually, I should say. Okay, I think we're at a good point right now, and we'll be able to start. I'm really glad to set this in motion. It looks like the mayor has proposed some sort of body camera program, or at least looking into the possibility of obtaining body cameras and what that would look like if either city council approves it or if it's mandated by one of the courts. And so this comes at a very fortuitous time. In the past, there was a pilot project in the works, maybe about 2 years ago. At that point in time, a representative from the police bureau came to the CRC, the Citizen Review Committee, and asked for feedback on possible policy recommendations that we might have. That individual also went to the PSEP, the Portland Committee on Community Engaged Policing, and asked for policy recommendations. PSEP did provide five policy recommendations, I believe, and also eight considerations, questions that were unanswered at that point in time about what a body camera program might look like. And so I think in furtherance of any kind of policy discussion, we on the CRC felt that would be important to bring some people in the room that have had experience with body camera programs, and especially in the context of police oversight, to answer some of the questions that have been raised in the past, and I'm sure to answer some of the questions that might be raised today by the people in attendance of this meeting. So I reached out a while back to Ms. Stella Cement, who is the acting independent police monitor for the city of New Orleans. The independent police monitor was enacted as part of the 2008 charter referendum for the city of New Orleans and opened its doors in August of 2009. Its mission is to improve police service to the community, civilian trust in the New Orleans Police Department, officer safety and working conditions. The police monitor has six general responsibilities. One is to ensure that all complaints regarding police misconduct are classified and investigated, to monitor police investigations into use of force to identify violations of civil rights, concerns of officer tactics and safety, risk to life, liberty, property, and adherence to laws and policy. To review and analyze aggregate data and complaints, to inform the community about the office and to listen and respond to community concerns, and also to help with community engagement for the police bureau, police department over there. Also to mend police community relationships by fostering effective police community partnerships, and to collect policy, police commendations, review and monitor police training and supervision issues, and support a healthy work environment. So just looking through that, it looks like it's a mixture of some of the things that the Citizen Review Committee does in its normal business, as well as some of the things that the PCEP, the Portland Committee on Community Engaged Policing, has been tasked to do with respect to community engagement. So I think Ms. Cement has quite a broad overview of some of the issues that we've been dealing with in the city. The city of New Orleans, like the city of Portland, is part of a settlement agreement. I believe it's called a consent agreement with the Department of Justice, and also has a monitor there that reviews that settlement agreement and the city's compliance with that. So in many ways, a very similar situation to the city of Portland. So I've taken up, I think, enough time in introduction. Stella, if I've missed anything, please let us know. But I would like to cede the floor to you, just kind of introduce yourself, and then just give an overview of your program as it relates to body-worn cameras, and generally what you have seen with respect to body-worn cameras in the police department over there in New Orleans.
Yes. Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for having me. I'm just going to throw this out there that if you have any questions or if there's anything you want me to go into more information about, more detail, just feel free to write it in the chat or to just interrupt me and ask. So as introduced, I am the acting independent police monitor for the city of New Orleans. I run the Office of the Independent Police Monitor, which is a part of local government. We are entirely civilian run. We provide oversight to the NOPD, which is our police force. That is our only law enforcement office that we provide oversight to, though there are other law enforcement agencies in the city. We are under a federal consent decree. We have been since we entered into it in 2012. So it's been almost 10 years of being under a federal consent decree. We are starting to reach a sustainment period where we have reached more or less full compliance with all of the different requirements under the federal consent decree. At the time that it was entered into, it was the most expansive in the country. Our office has been in existence before the federal consent decree. And our office also has a sister agency, which is the Office of the Federal Consent Decree Monitor, OCDM. They are federal monitors. They have a separate contract with the city, and they just oversee the four corners of the consent decree and the NOPD's compliance with the consent decree. Whereas our job is, it's a little different. We look beyond the consent decree. As mentioned, we are a complaint intake site. We run the community officer mediation program, We oversee and monitor and review misconduct investigations, use of force investigations, and we're on call 24 hours a day, all year long. For any officer-involved shootings or critical incidents, we go out to the scene and we monitor the investigation as it's happening. Great, I see today is about conversation. So I just wanna jump into body-worn camera footage, talking about how it works here in New Orleans, and feel free to ask any questions that are unique to Portland. We do have body-worn cameras. They were a component of our federal consent decree. In our federal consent decree, we were required to not just utilize body-worn cameras, but have our supervisors utilize them as well as a way to ensure accountability and to review the actions taken by the officers. I understand that there's always going to be concerns about outward-facing body-worn cameras. All I can say from our own experience is that we've been able to have a lot of accountability for our officers, even with the cameras that are located on our officers' chests facing outward. You're still able to capture a lot of the actions taken by the officers. Also, typically whenever you're reviewing an investigation, you're not just reviewing the actions of the one officer who's wearing the body-worn camera, you're actually reviewing the body-worn camera footage from multiple officers that are on the scene. So you're able to see the scene from many different perspectives, all of which, yes, will be from most likely a chest angle up or down, but you are able to still capture a lot of an event from body-worn cameras. When we initially introduced body-worn cameras, there was a lot of resistance. It took a while for people to buy into body-worn cameras and what their purpose is and how they would be used. I wanna provide some insight into what were safeguards put into place to ensure that the body-worn camera program was utilized as responsibly as possible in New Orleans. The first thing is that we do have different permission levels in our body-worn camera system. So we do use a contractor who provides the service, and it is a web-based service. So you're able to log on and view body-worn camera footage that is saved on like a website effectively. And you are able to review everyone's body-worn camera footage. Now, if there are different permission levels, so some people will not be able to view everything that is uploaded, or they will not be able to download everything that is uploaded. They won't be able to upload footage, or they may not be able to share footage or edit footage. So there are different permission levels depending on what type of user you are. And what type of purpose you need to serve with the body-worn camera footage. For example, our office as oversight, we're able to view the footage. I believe we're able to download it, but we cannot edit it. We also cannot share it. We can't send like a link of a body-worn camera footage to somebody else. Whereas the district attorney's office, they're able to download the footage, and they can send a link of the footage to like the defense counsel on a case as part of a discovery in the discovery process for criminal proceedings. They're also able to redact components of the body-worn camera footage or blur. So there's different ways to be able to protect privacy concerns, particularly having to do with juveniles maybe, or if there's information that's shared over the body camera that might be HIPAA related, like if the body cameras go into a hospital or some type of medical setting, you can find ways to redact that information or edit that information. I want to be very clear that there is an audit trail. So that means anytime anyone views the footage, changes the footage, edits it, does anything to it, it's going to be captured in the audit trail. So there is no way for anyone to be able to log into the system and do anything in the system without others being able to know that they've done it. This is particularly relevant in our misconduct investigations because our investigators, and not ours as in our office, because we do not investigate, but the investigators under the Public Integrity Bureau, who is our internal affairs for the district, they are able to determine if officers went in and viewed the body-worn camera footage prior to giving statements in misconduct investigations. So under our policy, officers are permitted to view body-worn camera footage prior to giving statements. It's under NOPD chapter 43.1.10, I believe. It is available online if you want to be able to see that policy chapter. And actually, I might even have a copy of it that I could just put in the chat later if that's helpful, if people want to see what the language reads. But any officer is able to view the footage prior to giving a statement. They are not required to, but they are allowed to. I will note that's giving a statement in a criminal or administrative capacity. So once a criminal investigation has been brought against the officer, or if it moves into an administrative investigation, the officer can watch the footage before giving their statement. But on the scene, they are required to give a statement immediately whenever there's an officer-involved shooting or a critical incident or use of force, and they are not able to watch their footage before giving the statement on the scene. And that statement on the scene can later on be utilized to be able to be compared to any statement that's given afterwards. I'm just reading the comment. What happens if they view the footage before giving a statement? Yes, they're allowed to. They're allowed to. They're allowed to. That said, many of them choose not to, which, you know, is their choice. Did they sign off on that policy? Yes. Yes, they did. So the DOJ has to sign off on every single policy that's created by the NOPD pursuant to our federal consent decree. And our federal judge, Judge Susie Morgan, also has to agree to every policy that the NOPD enacts. Thank you. So yes, the DOJ did sign off on that. The officers do still have to give a statement on the scene, particularly in officer-involved shootings. We also consider any type of untruthfulness or not being forthcoming in an investigation might result in a misconduct investigation being initiated against that officer. So for that reason, to provide information that is contrary to your body-worn camera footage is going to be highly problematic. I think if this is something that is of particular concern in Portland, I could also provide some examples of different times that we have had issues with contradictory testimony being provided in criminal proceedings by our officers or during the course of their investigation that goes against what was actually captured in the body-worn camera footage and how it was later investigated by the NOPD. I just want to make sure that I hit what I know are some of the concerns. So are there any questions about our audit trail, about user permissions?
Nadine, would you like me to read the question that's in the chat box?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I'm just taking a look. Are there other uses of force when an officer must give a statement prior to reviewing? Yes, all of them. So level 1 through 4, they give statements. So we conduct use of force investigations. So they will be giving statements on the scene if they, but they have to call it in as a use of force. So this is where body-worn camera footage is really, really helpful to the NOPD. We don't always know in real time when something's happening that is going to be alarming, concerning, or a violation of our policy. Quite frequently, it's captured after the fact by the body-worn camera footage. And the reason why I say it's captured after the fact is because the supervisors are required to review the body-worn camera footage before signing off on their subordinates' police reports. So they are supposed to review the body-worn camera footage before they're signing off on the police report, stating that the police officer has accurately captured the actions that they took during any investigatory action that is done by the officer. In reviewing the body-worn camera footage, if the officer observes anything that could be considered a violation of NOPD policy or the law, they will cut a number. Effectively, they will initiate misconduct investigations against their subordinate for failing to abide by NOPD policy. This is a difficult thing for us to fully capture in our data. So if you are looking to our data and you're like, I want to be able to see examples of this, that's actually going to be kind of tricky. And this is something that our office has been working with the NOPD on. But whenever an officer, a ranked officer, initiates misconduct against a subordinate. It's they're given a item number and then an R afterwards to signify that it was initiated by a rank officer. Anytime there's a misconduct investigation that's initiated by the public, they receive an item number with a P afterwards to signify that it was a public complaint. The R gives the distorted idea that the misconduct investigation would be about some type of inter-officer dispute or issue that, like, you know, failing to follow commands, you know, or failing to be respectful towards your rank. But in fact, a lot of the rank initiated complaints are actually done based on the interactions that they've observed in the body worn camera footage between the officer and a member of the public. The member of the public may never be contacted about that investigation that's happening. So they may never know that interaction that they have with an officer resulted in that officer being disciplined, being investigated, or being retrained. They may never know because they're able to use the body-worn camera footage to conduct the investigation without ever reaching out to that member of the public. So it creates an accountability system that takes some of the need to act off the shoulders of the everyday person that's having the encounter with the police. That person doesn't need to know that the policies were violated. They don't have to initiate the complaint in order for that officer to be held accountable. There's a high probability that the supervisor will check the body-worn camera footage, will spot it on their own, and will initiate the misconduct.
And Stella, I'm going to take notes. Yeah. So we'll have probably about 20 to 30 minutes just for a back and forth question period. Right. So I want you to be able to present everything you'd want to, and then I'll ask the questions that have been in the chat, I think.
Oh, good, forward. Good. Yeah, because I noticed somebody asked, do officers have the ability to shut their cameras on and off? Yes, they do. That might result in misconduct. So they do have the ability to shut the cameras on and off. There are very particular rules in our policies, and I can find exactly where they are, that state the rules around shutting off your cameras when it's appropriate. Supervisors can also shut off a camera of a subordinate. But again, there's a lot of rules about when you're allowed to do that. And if you do shut off your camera, that's almost always going to be used as an indication that that there should be something reviewed, that there might be an issue of concern. We see a lot of misconduct around the improper shutting off of cameras. That's because what we really want to see captured is everything. We want to see the conversations that are happening between supervisors and the officers that they're supervising. So especially when you have complicated matters that are happening on the scene, or you see officers asking questions about how to proceed, who to arrest. Like, for example, in domestic violence situations, if there has to be a dual arrest, under the consent decree, officers are required to get permission from their supervisors in order to conduct a dual arrest. We want to see that conversation happen. We want to see the permission get granted. We want to see the rationale behind that decision. We want to be able to review the body-worn camera and see all the work and all the decision-making that went into an arrest or went into an investigation. It should all be captured. So even if the officer is walking away for extended periods of time, they don't cut off the camera. We really only, even if they're on the phone with their supervisor in their squad car, they still don't cut off the camera. Completing the report, they don't cut off the camera. They're sitting in the squad car, completing the report with the camera running. And that's what we want to see. We also have the service provider who provides our body-worn cameras. If you cut your camera on, it will automatically start recording. I believe it's 30 seconds before you've cut it on. So you're still getting some footage, even if there's a delay in cutting on your camera. But we do expect that officers cut them on as soon as they get their call out. So we often like get footage of officers driving to scenes. The reason why we want that, again, is we want to hear what's called in over the radio. We want to hear what questions they're asking, what information they're receiving before they arrive. And then it continues rolling through their whole encounter. Did that answer your question about cutting off cameras?
Yes, it does. Let me kind of open up another topic.
Yes, thank you. Discussed.
Oh, great.
So with respect to turning off cameras and things like that, there was some concern about cameras capturing individuals that might be of a vulnerable population or youth or individuals that have been involved in perhaps a spousal abuse or things like that, that we might not want, or we might want to create policies not capturing. Do y'all have policies around that, that there are some individuals that would not be recorded if there were interactions with the police?
No, not to my knowledge.
Okay.
Again, that's why we have a service that enables us to redact, to blur, to or to edit. So that way, if there's information that involves minors or information that could be seen as a HIPAA violation to provide, it could be removed from the video before it's released, say, to the public or before it's released to defense, particularly, you know, in conflict cases where there's multiple co-defendants or where there's a CI, like a confidential informant, that has provided information to the officer. Or again, mostly with juveniles, you know, you're going to see some blurring or redaction or edits possibly happening to make sure that that information isn't provided in a way that would be illegal or detrimental to someone's safety or security.
And who is responsible for making those edits?
Who? I believe that the legal obligation falls on the district attorney or on the NOPD if they're releasing the video pursuant to a public record request. I think it kind of depends on who is the custodian of the record in that moment, and also who's requesting it and through what avenue are they requesting it. So for example, like I can go in and I can view it and it's not going to be redacted for me. But I'm not going to then share it. Like, even if I'm doing a review of the misconduct investigation and I've downloaded the video and effectively have become a custodian of that record under the Louisiana public records request, I wouldn't release that body worn camera footage with that information in there. That would then be on me if I do that.
And you've kind of led into another area where there's been a lot of discussion in Portland, that being access to those videos, public access, whether
right.
through requests or releasing videos in general after incidents. Can you give us an idea of how that works in Portland, to what extent those videos are released to the public, and if there's a request for it, how that works?
Yeah. So the public can request it. We have very expansive public record laws in Louisiana. And the public can request body-worn camera footage. It may be redacted if necessary, I believe. I would need to check exactly what the conditions are for them to decide to do that. For the public record request, they may have to pay for the video footage. There are times where individuals do, you know, though it is public and they can request it, they might have to pay for some of it. Otherwise, the NOPD has a policy to release all body-worn camera footage involving officer-involved shootings within 10 days of the incident, unedited. So they will release, they typically have like a press conference, they do a first show with like, you know, media and reporters, and then they'll release it through news outlets, and news outlets might decide to edit the footage. But the NOPD will provide that footage to the public within 10 days of any officer-involved shooting. They will also meet privately with the families of the individuals that might have been affected by the officer-involved shootings. Even if those individuals are facing criminal charges now, the Public Integrity Bureau will still meet privately with the family of the individual who's involved. So they have an opportunity to privately view the footage before it's released to the public.
And I do want to open it up here in just a minute for questions. We have a lot of people in this room, and I'm sure there's a lot of interest, but to cover one last point that's been raised several times by individuals in this room, as well as others, about the cost. There's been a discussion whether body-worn cameras save money on things like litigation, but also storage costs, review costs, individual having to review those files. Right. What's been your experience with that?
So I don't have the exact dollar amount. So I can't speak to that. I can say that, that yes, body-worn camera footage is a big commitment. You know, especially the type of footage that I'm describing now, we're talking about hours of footage. Recently, after the murder of George Floyd, there were a lot of protests in New Orleans, as I know there were in Portland. And in one incident, the police utilized tear gas against protesters. This incident that occurred was recorded by body-worn camera footage. And the incident itself was probably around like a half an hour or less. But because of all the different cameras that were out there recording, it resulted in something like 300 hours of body-worn camera footage for this one incident. And our office reviewed all 300 hours of it. But, you know, it does create a lot of footage, and that can be very burdensome, I'm not going to lie, for the NOPD to have to go through that footage whenever they're obligated to release it. And for the district attorney's office, I know the district attorney's office is frequently asking for more funding to be able to have staff to go through the body-worn camera footage for criminal proceedings. And it also could be burdensome even for the defense bar, because they might receive like discovery dumps of hours of footage when they file motions. I mean, yes, it is. There is going to be some work around like, how is it going to be viewed? How is it going to be stored? And how are you going to release it? And what kind of obligation are you going to place on yourself to do any type of redactions or blurring or edits from the footage before it's released? Because all of that is going to take manpower. There's just no way around that. But that said, the footage, it changes everything. I can't stress that enough. It changes our criminal proceedings. It ensures, you know, Louisiana is the incarceration capital of the world. It ensures that that the people that are being prosecuted are the appropriate people to be prosecuted, and that the charges being brought against them are the appropriate charges to bring against them. Prior to body-worn camera footage, I really don't know if you could have said that in this state. And even with the body-worn camera footage, we're still trying to kind of play catch up criminally on in our criminal justice system. And the body-worn camera footage really helps, you know, especially now, like we have a lot of exonerees. I mean, this is the type of stuff where if we had that footage, we might have never brought those improper charges against people. I mean, that would have been the hope. But I do think it helps create public trust with the NOPD and with the district attorney's office. And I do think that's important. The other thing is that it helps with liability and with lawsuits that are brought against officers. You know, I really think that initially when body-worn cameras were introduced, there was a belief that this was going to result in the city having more liability. But in fact, you know, I do think, and I'm just speaking anecdotally, that the result has been that actually we're seeing where officers are doing a better job than we thought they were doing. So it ensures that, I guess, the liability is more appropriate. Does that make sense? That like the lawsuits that are brought are the ones that should be brought, and that you're not wasting a lot of resources and time on the wrong things. And it really increases officer accountability. And if you have a problematic officer, you're able to identify that faster and take the steps necessary to get them off the street, because one problematic officer could end up costing your city a lot of money. I mean, in liability, damages, and just trust, and God forbid, human life. I'm trying to think if there's anything else worth highlighting with the cost benefits. I mean, you know, it is going to kind of be expensive, but I do think it's, I mean, for us, it has completely changed our policing. And now, you know, our officers, all of them want the cameras. They want the cameras.
All right. Thank you, Stella. I'm going to read some of the questions that have been in the chat. If anybody has additional questions, I'd like to just ask directly, please raise your hand and I'll call on individuals directly. But in the chat, one of the questions was, if I heard correctly, a police supervisor has to review all body camera footage for every police report turned in at the end of the night. How much time does that take? And how many supervisors are assigned to this task alone? And is that for all police investigations or just use of force?
It's for all investigations. I believe it's for all investigations that may be involved in arrest. I'll look at what the policy is, but it's every supervisor's responsibility. There isn't just like one supervisor that's responsible for reviewing body-worn cameras. Anytime a supervisor is signing off on a police report, so anytime a police report is utilized, they have to review the body-worn camera footage. And that's all supervisors.
Okay. Next question is, and there's some people have asked multiple questions, so I'm going to try to hit from different people and then come back to the multiple questions. Does an officer have the right to refuse to wear a body-worn camera? And what happens if an officer, quote unquote, forgets to turn on his camera?
An officer cannot refuse to wear a body-worn camera. If it's assigned to them, they have to wear it. It's considered their equipment and they have to wear it. Not all officers are assigned body-worn cameras. So officers of a certain rank are not assigned them. And detectives do not wear body-worn cameras. A lot of that has to do with the nature of the work that they do, particularly around like confidential informants, talking to witnesses who have witnessed murders, or they don't have to wear body-worn cameras, but a lot of them may request to. And what was the question? Oh, what about officers who forget to turn it on? Yeah, they'll be disciplined. There is no forgetting. You get disciplined the very first time. There's no, like, yeah, you could say you forget, but every single time you forget, it's the subsequent consequence will go up. And you can really only say you forget to turn on your camera maybe the first time you're disciplined. After that, it's going to be considered, you know, probably a sign that that you're not forgetting.
Somebody posted that recently a judge made a decision not to release from a camera. What sort of recourse does the public have in perhaps New Orleans to get to that camera footage?
Okay, so if a judge, so I'm assuming there's like a criminal or civil proceeding and a judge has ruled not to release a body worn, like to not give it over to the defense, I imagine, but as like pursuant
if,
to a motion,
if whomever asked that question, if you can unmute yourself and kind of get to that, that would help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just because there's a difference between releasing it to the defense and actually publishing it into the record, in which case publishing it into the record makes it available to the public. Giving it to the defense doesn't necessarily release it to the public. The defense attorney doesn't need to release it.
I see Sam Miller came on.
In this particular incident, a young man was killed who was shot by police officers.
Okay.
And the judge made a decision to not release the body cam to the man's family.
Okay.
And then there was, after much controversy and much public dismay around that, he gave out 10 seconds of it. But he didn't give out much footage at all until much, much later. And so I just was concerned that if, in fact, the judge has the right to do that, it seems like that would be kind of a way of a get out of jail free card for a bad actor who does this action toward a person.
Yeah, totally. I understand. Yeah, I understand that question now. Yeah, that would be very concerning. But in that situation, the issue would be that I imagine this family has filed a civil suit against the police force, most likely, for the wrongful death of their child. And then no.
No,
like why was the
really,
judge involved?
Really, I don't know, but this is really, really early in the process before the criminal investigation began, or before the trial began. this was early into the process, and okay. I don't know why the judge made that decision. Consequently, it was ruled as justifiable by the officers, but the camera does not necessarily agree with the ruling that was made. So. Right.
Well, and I'll say that we also have our own use of force review board that determines whether or not the actions that are taken by the officers are justifiable or not. Being justifiable doesn't mean that you will never be held liable for what happened. In that situation, that is kind of tricky. I mean, our police force voluntarily releases these videos. That is part of their policy to release to the public. And they do that in light of just our problematic past, truthfully, with officers in our community. And in order to gain public trust and public buy-in to the police reform efforts that we have made, they have chosen to have this very expansive release policy where they release a lot, and they release a lot of stuff that you know that makes people very, very angry. But that said, I do understand that there are going to be different cities and different tactics taken with body-worn camera footage. I think that any time you're going to be looking at body-worn camera policy, tied to it has to be the idea of transparency. Because there's no point in having the cameras if people aren't going to be able to see what it's recording. You know, I don't really know why you would have them then.
And that was the first kind of point that was made by the community engaged policing committee that we have, is transparency is of the utmost importance. Yeah. So hopefully with the release of the camera footage and timely release, and especially how it's stored and some of the things that you've addressed, that might help with community trust and transparency. Next question is, how are body-worn cameras used to audit daily activities to ensure officers' conduct meets policy requirements? And I'll add a little bit to that also, if these things are being reviewed in order to ensure that policies are being met, our policies also sometimes changed based on camera reviews.
Yes, policies are changed all the time based on camera reviews. Actually, we're right now in an endless review of our strip search policy due to different confusion that has been captured by the body-worn camera footage. There's a lot of confusion out on the field, when officers are out on the street with what constitutes a strip search. And whether or not it's justified in the moment, doing it right there on the street. So the only reason why we know about this confusion is because of the body-worn camera footage. And so it's been, you know, reviewed multiple times, and kind of we're still reviewing it based on things that we're capturing in the body-worn camera footage of different scenarios. Actually, the body-worn camera footage ends up being used as a training technique in our academy, and as a very big catalyst for policy revisions in our Professional Standards and Accountability Bureau. Now, going back to the question of how do we use it to audit to determine if what resource allocation is according to policy, is that what the question was, resource allocation?
Maybe in a way, but how are the daily activities being monitored? Do supervisors take random samples? Like, let's say someone gets pulled over, but there's no ticket or something like that. Are those all audited, or is there like a random sampling
there's different auditing schedules. So I don't have all of them, but there are different auditing schedules. Supervisors carry some of that burden where they are obligated to check different things. This was this actually is an interesting question. It's something that came up in New Orleans recently, where we had officers who were engaging in unauthorized vehicle pursuits, and then they were hiding it by coding it in as a gone on arrival, GOA. And so they were cutting off their body-worn camera footage and then saying they were coding. So you have to code your body-worn camera footage when you upload it into the system. So they were coding it as gone on arrival. So that was explaining why the camera footage was so short. But actually, it ended up that the same officers that were doing this ended up engaging in another unauthorized pursuit. The pursuit ended up resulting in two teenagers losing control of the vehicle that they were driving, crashing into the side of a building and dying, and someone inside of the building dying. And it resulted in a huge misconduct investigation during which they pulled all of the prior body-worn camera footage of those officers that were involved, realized that they were coding in short snippets of body-worn camera footage as GOA, gone on arrival. And in reviewing those gone on arrival videos, they were able to see the beginnings of unauthorized pursuits. So they were able to determine that these officers, this was actually a pattern of behavior and a way of trying to hide those actions from their supervisors by coding them in as gone on arrival. And gone on arrival is going to be audited significantly less by supervisors than something that would be like a much more juicy, like police activity that requires much more review than say a gone on arrival. Does that make sense? That there's different auditing schedules that exist for supervisors, but then also our Professional Standards and Accountability Bureau are responsible for conducting audits based on the different paragraphs of the consent decree to make sure that the NOPD is staying compliant with the consent decree. And some of those audits involve reviewing body-worn camera footage to make sure that the officers are taking the actions necessary. So like in the case of domestic violence, they will review the police report, they will review the body-worn camera footage and make sure that everything is matching and makes sense, that the police took the steps necessary required by the domestic violence investigation policy. Those are done, I believe, on a quarterly basis. So it depends on what type of audit, what the subject matter is, in which case they would do it pursuant to whatever their audit standards are. So I'm pretty sure like they put it into a randomizer, like randomly select so many that are representative of the police force. And then they review that collection of body worn camera footage and that collection of police reports that correspond. It really kind of depends on the department, on the topic, but yes, you do have to have a lot of, I guess you would call them random audits based on subject matter, if you want to be able to know how officers are doing in those particular areas.
All right, thank you. And again, if anybody wants to ask questions directly, please raise your hand with the raise hand function, and then we'll call on you, and I'll keep on reading the questions in the chat otherwise. So the next question that I have from David Kameji, who is the co-chair of the Bureau-wide Advisory Committee, which makes recommendations on the police budget from the community side. And the question, appropriately enough, is could you get the costs to NOPD and related services for body-worn cameras? Do you have any idea how much that would be? I can reach out to the NOPD, but would you have any idea?
Yeah, I could try to find out. I could try to find out and get that back to you.
So I'll work with that on you. And then the second question was, has public trust improved with the use of body-worn cameras?
Yes. Without a doubt, yes. I mean, New Orleans had quite a reputation prior to Hurricane Katrina and right afterwards. With our police department, there was not a lot of trust in our police department. And I think we captured national news with some of the really criminal actions that some of our police officers were taking. So we were coming from a really dark place. And so yes, there is definitely far more public trust in the NOPD now than there was prior to body-worn camera footage. That said, now, I believe that the public has increased expectations for the police. So now the things that the public cares about and what they're looking for might be different from what they were looking for in the past. So people may not trust the police still. You know, I don't know if we're ever going to get to a place where everyone is going to say that they trust the police. But I do think that there's more accountability measures put in a place and there is more trust in the system. And that is because of body-worn camera footage. So there is increased trust, but there is still problems. You know, every single time you think that you make headway, you might be capturing something like, you know, the gone on arrival example. we thought we had made great headway with unauthorized pursuits. And then we learned that there was a way for officers to still engage in them and to try to hide it from public view or from supervisory review. But I think the important thing is that the body-worn camera footage increases public trust because it gives you an ability to hold officers accountable, whereas before you weren't able to. So it's disappointing to hear about the actions. You know, it's like, it's one of those things where, you know, yeah, it's disappointing to find out about what some officers might be doing, but the camera footage enables you to find out and to then, you know, terminate or hold those officers accountable. And that's what you want. It's just, you know, it's always going to be a little bit of a blow to see on camera something that you don't want to know that your officers have done. Well, maybe not know, but you always want to know, but it's frustrating that they've taken the action that they've taken.
And Shayna, who is the vice chair of the CRC, reminded me that we usually make introductions at the beginning of these meetings. Right. And because of the size of this meeting, we weren't doing that orally. But if people would like to, in the chat box, put their names and perhaps their affiliations and who they might represent or any organizations, I'm sure everybody would appreciate that. I'm familiar with a lot of people in this room, but other people may not be. So please help yourself with that. Okay, we do have a raised hand. Sally Mize.
Thanks, Badeen. Mine has more to do, and I don't know if this is the right forum for it, the physicality of what the cameras are like. I've seen a few, and I'm wondering if we've had, not only if that's explained, are there favorites that police like or dislike more than others? And along with that, has our department, RPDs, is there a fact history on, say, in the last year on what they like? And I'm not talking about the police association necessarily, but just some forum that may have recorded what they think. And if it's not the right place to ask it, that's fine too.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll be able to weigh in on that as much. I will say though that that not all body-worn camera footage is equal. Like, you know, some of it is going to be a better quality than others. I think for just something to keep in mind when you're picking a contractor, when you're picking a device or whatever, that you want to make sure that it's lightweight. And that it has a mount that goes onto the outside of an officer's uniform that can go over a rain jacket or any type of other jacket, because nothing is worse than getting hours of footage of a rain jacket wiping against a camera when you really wanted to capture more than that. And it seems obvious, right? But like, if you get a camera that can't be mounted to a jacket, you know, you're going to have a problem. The other thing is that it has to not fall off when the officer is running or is in a physical struggle with an individual. And that's a big problem in New Orleans. We'll have like 15 officers involved in something and it becomes very physical. All the cameras fall off, all the mounts. So you have all of these cameras on the ground and they're all black. So you don't know whose camera is whose. There's no identifiable like markers on them. And so it's like that, that's just, those are like small things that are just annoying and officers complain about them. So I'm just letting you know.
What I saw was apparently something attached to, and this is what I couldn't figure out. Was it a vest that went over everything else?
Right.
As part of that, or was it detachable?
It's detachable.
Change it around.
It's, yeah,
like you suggested for weather.
Yeah, it's detachable. I mean, like a lot of them now are like small square boxes. They're like about that big. They're black. And they tend to just sit like directly in the middle of an officer's chest. it has almost like a fish angle, like a, what is it called? Fish lens angle. So mm-hmm. you can, yeah. it captures a rather wide view.
Fish eye.
Okay. Thank you, Sally. We have a couple more questions that I want to get to. I want to make sure we get to Barb first.
Cool beans. So I'm going to elevate what Candace was mentioning in the chat, which is unintended consequences. I can tell from your struggles with getting the right cameras that almost kind of, you know, that answers one of the things for that. But what I'm really curious about is hacking and any safeguards from that. In terms of, I presume your audit is timestamped too about who's been there and when they were there. But everything's hackable.
Huh. I don't have an answer on that. I will say that New Orleans was recently hacked. We were hacked in 2019. It caused a lot of our city systems to go down, if not all of them. Particularly on the NOPD side, it was extremely frustrating, but our body-worn camera footage was not hacked. So a lot of it is, I think, because it's not an application, it's a web-based system. So that was beneficial, and it, I'm pretty sure, is not administered by us. It's administered by, I think, it's Axon is the company that the NOPD uses. But if y'all have concerns about security, that is definitely something where I could see who on the NOPD side is over the security stuff and see if they could provide it. I mean, the real issue isn't even necessarily the hacking of like the cloud or whatever that the camera footage is in. I will say, if you're talking about unintended consequences, it is the downloading of footage and then the emailing of that footage to others through emails that are considered public record that you have to also watch out for, because unintentionally, like, emails will get hacked and then they'll be able to see footage like this. So something to consider when you're picking like a contractor or whatever is you can encrypt the footage. So basically password protect it. So that way you're able to send footage to individuals without downloading it. You could send like a link that is only good for their email address, and you can send like passwords. So that's one way to kind of to handle the security concerns.
Okay. The next question is from Mr. Dan Handelman of Portland Copwatch. And Mr. Handelman is very familiar with this group and other groups. He's been working in the area for quite a while. He as well has recently been appointed to the commission, which will establish the new board that will have oversight against about complaints against the police bureau. And so with that context, one of the things that he's raised in the past is that prosecutors generally do use body-worn camera footage to prosecute criminals. But only from his review of studies, 8% of prosecutors noted that they use body-worn camera against police officers who might have committed some sort of misconduct. So the question is, basically, has there been discussion about how body-worn cameras are used to prosecute community members versus how often they're used to prove or disprove misconduct? And I'm assuming on behalf of the police bureau.
That's a good question. I will note that not all accountability is going to happen in a criminal courtroom. It just isn't. So body-worn camera footage might not be utilized in the prosecuting of officers, but that's because a lot of officers are not being criminally prosecuted, and that's happening across the country. I think the public is, you know, I'm now going really off topic, but I do think that the culture is changing around the prosecuting of officers for criminal acts. And I imagine that as more criminal prosecutions are pursued, body-worn camera footage will come into those proceedings more. And you'll see that area kind of get fleshed out a little bit more and those numbers change. But right now, if you were to ask the question of how often is body-worn camera footage utilized to be able to hold officers accountable in some type of disciplinary fashion or some type of employment fashion, I would say very, very, very often. And that might be harder to track just because you're then going to rely on the individual police forces to track how often they use body-worn camera footage as an exhibit, I guess, in a misconduct investigation or in an employment action that like results in an officer being terminated or suspended or whatever like that jurisdiction calls it. But yeah, the footage will be used to hold officers accountable. It just may not always be in the criminal context.
Thank you. So we've reached the time for our meeting today. Stella, I still have a few questions that were in the chat. Yeah. Is it okay if I maybe email them to you later?
Yeah, yeah, of course, of course. Okay, and I'll try to follow up with the questions about the cost and the security stuff. I'll see if someone on the NOPD side can speak to that.
And thank you very much for your help today. You're the first person we've reached out to. This will be an ongoing discussion with other organizations around the country, but thank you for being the first brave enough to speak with us. I really appreciate the work that you're doing, and certainly I'm learning more about that. We do have new people on this meeting, so if you are curious about the work that the Citizen Review Committee is doing, please visit us on the IPR website. I've also put my email address in case you have any questions about this or anything else. It's vadim.mazursky@portlandoregon.gov. And I especially want to point out that we have friends, Brock Meyer from the Oregon Justice Resource Center and Ada Goodley from the Institute for Civil Rights and Justice at the Southern University Law Center. We'd love to hear more from you as we continue working in these areas. And everybody else, of course, but you know, some new attendees here. So look forward to these conversations. Thank you, everybody, for attending. Good seeing familiar faces and happy to see the new ones. Thank you, everybody.